Well, here at the bottom, the second white line on Kaf Zayin Amud Beis, Zalpan Siman. What does Zalpan mean? What? Yeah, it's Rosh Tevot for what?
Names.
Names? How do you know that? Oh, you're fair, you're prepared.
So,
who are those four people?
They are the committee of Rabbi Zakai.
No, in other words, they're Zalpan, the mnemonic. Zakai, Lezer, Eliezer, Preda, and Nechunya, the four rabbis whose teachings we are about to encounter. It's just a kind of headline here. So remember the topic we were discussing last time, which was urination. Yes. Torahi ulamda nachdo tzrichim. Sha'alu tamidav et Rabbi Zakai. Bima he'erachta yamim. By what did you merit long life? So what does he say? What are his chuyot? And this is what the Gemara is this question posed to four different rabbis by the students about, you know, why did they merit long life? And the connection to our Gemara is connected to this halacha of relieving oneself in proximity to prayer, either in physical proximity or in temporal proximity. So Amar lahem, miyamai lo hishtaneti mayim betoch da'ar amot shel tfila. I never urinated within four amot of my prayer space. Either, like according to the Gemara, where after you pray, you should wait until you begin doing your business, because, as we said, like when you're davening, even when you take your three steps back and finish the words coming out of your mouth, the engine is still running, the prayer engine is still running, and you need a little hafsaka. Or to physically move away from the place. You see Tosfot here, lo ishtaneti tochtar amos shel tefila, va'afilu hecha sheyesh heter gamur, kegon sheshaha kedei hiluch arba amos. It's not that I was careful with the halacha. And there's the question of, and this is true for all of the statements of the rabbis here, the question of what did you do that you caused you to merit long life? It can't be, I did a mitzvah. Well, I mean, mitzvahs are a big deal, but...
No, but there's no difference.
Right, because it has to be something that he took on above and beyond.
Why is that? Kibud Ava'im is the mitzvah that you get long life, right?
So Kibud Ava'im is the one, is the exception that proves the rule, right? Shluach HaKen is the exception that proves the rule, right? The whole Agadah about the Elisha ben Abuya revolves around the fact that, generally speaking, we don't know what causes. And these two things are what happens in the story. Right? So, did he also wear tzitzis? Rabbi Zakai? He also wore tzitzis. Did he also eat kosher food? He also ate kosher food. Like, there's 1,000 mitzvot asay and mitzvot lot asay. So it has to be something that he did, like, above and beyond the requirement that he described as his special merit by which he merited long life. It's not that I was merely makbid on the halakha. It's even above and beyond, even when it's mutter to urinate, I was actually careful to always have this distance between the celestial and the terrestrial, between you know, the great dichotomy in Judaism, right? We are but an inch away from angels, and we're also animals, and trying to keep ourselves elevated when we still need to go to the bathroom is part of the challenge, or part of the project of the halakha. Velo chiniti shem l'chaverai, and I never called my friends by a nickname. So again, Tosfot says, "Lo chiniti shem l'chaverai, afilu kinui delet havegnai, delo havegnai." As the Gemara says here, the Gemara, he quotes the Gemara in Bava Metzia, "Dehamechane shem l'chaveru ve'ein lo chelik l'olam habo, haynu b'chinui shel pgam mishpacha." The Rambam paskins this way. that one of the things that causes you to lose Olam Haba is if you call somebody by a nasty nickname.
That's right?
Whatever it is, like, you know, if you, there was a kid in first grade. You know, in first grade, kids are all little scrawny little things. And there was one kid who was like a head taller than everybody else, and probably like 40 pounds heavier than every other kid. So somebody nicknamed him Bubba. I don't know, like Blubber, I guess. Bubba, they call. And this kid, and then like within a year, everybody else said he was just ahead of the game. Right? And within a year, everybody caught up to him. And he was, you know. But to the end of high school, this was first grade. To the end of high school, everybody still called him Bubba. So I imagine it didn't make him happy. So in other words, this idea that you call somebody by a pejorative nickname, Stinky, whatever it is, so you lose your share in Olam Haba, because you're really like you're doing damage to somebody. You could really, because somebody walks around their whole life with one of these nicknames. So that's only if you call them by a pejorative nickname. So he says, I was knocked, but I never called anybody by a nickname. Yeah, well, so it's not mechubad. I mean, there are people who never go by their given name. I mean, my grandfather's generation, everybody in that family had some nickname. Some of them were like I had Uncle Seymour, but everybody called him Mickey. And I had an Uncle David, everybody called him Moogie. I don't know what that meant. Right? So sometimes people never go, you know, if you have some people have a name they don't like, so they never go by, they go by the middle name, they go by something else, they choose a different name for themselves. But I guess if somebody wants to be called by something else, so it's Sonosh Adam Kvodo, but in principle, to call somebody by a nickname is somehow, I don't know, deflating their identity. Right? In other words, a person's entitled to be called what they want. And if you to call somebody by a nickname, even if it's not derogatory, is nevertheless somehow like taking away something from their identity. Right? And this is true for all, right? In other words, are you Paul or you Pinchas?
I'm somewhere between Paul and Pinchas.
Right, you're still working it out.
I'm working on Pinchas.
Right?
I had a much worse problem as a child. My surname was Lipschitz.
Oh.
You can imagine what they called me.
Yeah, I can imagine. That's how you became Levy.
That's right.
Thank you. yeah, that's a bad
thing. That was painful for 12 years of school.
Yeah. My kids say they don't like the last name Sachs. I got made fun of for 1,000 things when I was a kid. No one ever made fun of my last name. People say it sounds like a naughty word, which is funny because in English no one ever made that connection, only in Hebrew. Or Sachs, they used to shalom, they used to call shalom garbayim. Right? Because Sachs. And then they used to call them smelly socks. So what did the teacher do in like third grade? The teacher, one kid was calling him smelly socks. So the teacher made this kid buy Shalom a pair of socks. you can only imagine how this really solved the problem. And every year, this kid alphabetically was like right behind us. So every year you go to parent teachers and like we're coming out and they're going in and the parents would say, yeah, we had to buy you the sock. So Zakai said, I was careful about this halakha about urinating in proximity of prayer. I never called a friend by a nickname. V'lo bitalti kiddush hayom. And I never did not fulfill making kiddush. So what do you mean, never not fulfilling Kiddush? So the Rashba says, he was always careful about making Kiddush. Where'd you get that from? So Shant's quoting the Rashba, who says, I was always careful about making Kiddush al Yayin. even though you can make it on lechem, you can make it on schnapps, right? I will take this. So as if you don't have wine, you can make hamotzi at night over the challah. If you don't have wine, that's what I meant. It was a test. You it's not a chiddush to tell you can make hamotzi over the challah. You wash like the yekis. You wash first, then you recite kiddush over the lechem. And instead of saying Bri Gofen, you say hamotzi lechem in haaretz, and then the broch of kiddush, and then you slice the challah and hand it out. And during the day, if you don't have wine, you can make kiddush on chamara medina, right? On liquor. Generally, we say on liquor. That halacha is only in the absence of wine. In other words, if you don't have it now, nowadays kosher wine is easy to get and readily available, both here and in Chutz Laaretz. But during the day, according to most poskim, lechatchila, you should always make kiddush on wine if it's available. There is, however, a widespread custom, and our own beloved Mordasra follows this practice. He likes vodka. Yeah, okay, it's disturbing. It's still the halacha. Okay. But if you do make kiddush, so there is this well-established minug that people make kiddush in the morning on schnapps, on vodka, on whiskey, on whatever it is. But as I always point out, when you do that, you still need all the other requirements, which is a kos shalem, a kos sheno pagum, and a reviyat, which is about 3 ounces. You don't need to drink all 3 ounces, but you need to make kiddush over. You can't make kiddush in this, right? There is a minority opinion that allows you to make kiddush in a shot glass, but we don't paskin that way. I mean, we paskin that way in the sense that you look around, you see people do it all the time, but one who makes lechatchila, one should make kiddush on wine. If one follows this practice of making kiddush on schnapps during the day, you should make kiddush over a vias on a proper kiddush cup. That's bigger than a shot glass. Right, that's drinking glass.
It was like a little tiny juice glass.
Yeah.
It was nice. That's perfect. That's why I need my whiskey for Shabbos morning.
So the guy
hooked him
and I was the
shikker.
I'm like, no, forget it.
So he says,
but on Friday night, it's preferable to do that with lechem.
If you don't have wine, then you should make it over lechem. Yeah.
As opposed to
anything else, yeah. So he says, I was always careful with kiddush. So the Rashba interprets that to mean, I was always careful with kiddush ala yayin. Now, the reason the Rashba says that is because of the continuation of the Gemara. Imaz kena haitali. I had an old mama. Pamachat machra kipa sheberosha vehevia li kiddush hayom. And she once had to sell her tichel in order to get me a glass of wine to make kiddush. Tana keshemeta henichalo shlosh meod garbe yayin. And when this old mama died, she left him 300 barrels of wine.
That's a lot of wine.
Yeah, and why did they have so much wine?
A lot of guesses.
No, in other words, if you had 300 barrels of wine, what did that mean?
You were a wine maker.
No, it meant that you had money.
Huh?
You had money. So why did they have so much money?
Because
he was makbid on this halacha. And the guy was rewarded. Because Shemet who? When Rabbi Zakkai died, hiniach levanav shloshet alafim garve yayin. You see, the Tosfos says hiniach lo shloshet alafim. Well, there's two different gittes. Shlosh meot garve yayin. Kida amrinan hizhir bekidush hayom zoche umalin lo garve yayin. Gemara says, if you're careful about making kiddush on wine, you'll be rewarded by having bountiful barrels of wine. You'll always be, you won't ever be in overdraft in the wine department. Rav Huna, Hava Asa Rita, Bekai Kameder Rav. Rav Huna had a belt that was made of straw. He had like, I don't know, he had to like keep his pants up with a I don't know, you know, let's say he took a piece of hay or hemp or whatever it was. And so he goes to Rav. So Omar Lay Mayai, well, like, why are you dressed that way? Like, why do you have a... So Omar Lay Lo Havali Kiddusha. I didn't have Kiddush, meaning I didn't have money to buy wine for Kiddush. Umashkante Lehem Yanai V'atai Bei Kiddusha. So I pawned my belt in order to buy wine. Now, this must have been a good belt. So Omar Le Yehe Rava de Timot Beshirai. You should be enwrapped, Yehi Ratzon, you should be enwrapped in silks. You know, right now you look like a real schlepper. You look like a real schnorrer. Like, is a guy's like holding his pants up with the I don't know, like, what would be the equivalent? With a piece of string, right? Says you should be enwrapped in some meaning, like, you know, now, because you suffer the busha in order to perform the mitzvah, so your reward should be that you'll be covered in silks. Ki ichlal Rabba Bare, when his son got married, now Rav Huna was the father of Rabba, so at Rabba's wedding. Ravuna Inish Gutzahava. Rav Inish was a, what do you call that? A short person. What's the PC term? Well, that's not PC.
Midget.
That's not PC. What does it say there?
Vertically.
Oh, it's vertically. Short person.
Yeah, it's a short person.
Diminutive stature.
Right? Gana Afurya, Atayin Benotava Kalotea, Shalchan Vishadan Minaihu, Alea ad de itum b'shirai. So he was on the bed, and his daughters and daughters-in-law came in, and they threw all of their coverings and their, you know, like, I remember when I was a kid, like, you know, and everybody would come over Thanksgiving, so they just put all the coats on the bed. You know, it's like you're a little kid, and you've got like 20 coats, 20 winter coats, like on a big bed, on a big pile. It's like you see like a big pile of leaves in the backyard. Like, what's the natural instinct for a kid? Right, you jump on it, right? So I remember I had this one aunt Seal, and she was always like a fancy lady. She always had like a fur coat. It was always like, she didn't like putting the coat on the bed, but like, you know, if she would have been in a fight, if she said, you know, you have to hang it up on a hanger, so I could jump all over Aunt Seal's fur coat. And I remember, like, later I heard they made fur out of seals, and couldn't have, like, well, is this the same seal? So Rav Huna's a little guy, he's on the bed, they don't see him, they throw all the silk cloaks on top of him. So the bracha came true. Shma Rav, the Ifkid. So Rav heard the story, and he was upset. So Omar, my time alone, Martelichi, ki berachticha v'chein lama. When I gave you a bracha that one day you'll be covered in silk, why didn't you bless me back v'chein lama and same right back at you? The bracha would have come true for me also. It's a joke. You know, still. Now there's a story in 1912, when the Hebrew author Shai Agnon published his first book, V'Hayakov L'Mishor, newly translated into English as And the Crooked Shall Be Made Straight. The book was published in Yerushalayim by a Breslover chosid, but it was the publisher, meaning the printer was this Breslover chosid. The publisher was Yosef Chaim, Yosef Chaim Brenner, Hashem Yikom Domo, who was kind of like a secular saint. And Brenner did not have enough money to pay the printer for the books. So according to the story, he pawned his belt. I've always heard this story, and I feel like this must have been a really special belt. Like, you know, you didn't hear that he had a belt made out of gold or something. Like, how much could you get for... How much could you get for this belt that it made a difference? Now, this story may or may not be true. It's a story that Agnon told. So, being reminded of this Gemara, I wonder if Agnon didn't weave this Gemara into... doesn't make that much. Shalu Tamidav et Rabbi Elazar ben Shamua. You know who Rabbi Elazar ben Shamua was? Was one of the Saru Gemalchus. He was a Talmud. He was one of the distinguished Talmidim of Rabbi Akiva, and he was one of the distinguished Rebbeim of Rabbi Yehuda Nosi. And even though there aren't that many statements in the Gemara quoting Rabbi Elazar ben Shamua, he was this kind of bridge figure between these two, you know, arguably the two greatest figures in the Mishnaic era, Rabbi Akiva and Rabbi Yehuda Nosi. B'mar achti yamim, what did you do to merit long life? Amar lahem miyamai lo asiti kapandaria lebet hakneset. You know this halacha we've mentioned a few times. You can't take a shortcut through the shul. Right? In other words, now that we have this other door over here in the shul, let's say you're in the lobby, and let's say there's like a big tumult over there. You know, sometimes getting out the front door, for some reason they only ever open one of the doors. It's a double door. You have a lot of people moving in one direction. They should open both doors. Yeah, exactly. So that's kapandaria, right? You're not allowed to take a shortcut. But there are cases when this halacha does not apply. Like if the shortcut existed before the shul was built there. Right? If the shul came and kind of imposed itself on a thoroughfare, so then the halacha of kapandaria doesn't exist. So he says, Elazar ben Shamua, he was always makpid on kapandaria. Velo pasati al roshei am kadosh. Rashi says, what does it mean he never stepped over the heads of the holy congregation? Keshahayu tamidehen beveta midrash al gabe karka, haholech al gabe misibatan leshev limkoman, nireh kposeya al roshei ha'am. As the Talmidim would come, they would sit on the floor. The Rav would come in, and he'd have to get to the front, so he can kind of walk over them. He wasn't literally walking on their heads, but it looks disrespectful. He says, I never did that. V'lo nasati kapai b'lo bracha. And I never duchin without saying a bracha. What does it mean to duchin without saying a bracha? So there are certain cases in which the kohen, as normally the kohen goes up, and he says the shekicham v'tivano levarechet amo Yisrael be'ava, and then he says the bracha kohenim. But if a kohen is duchening more than once a day, I mean, most of like, and as if a kohen is just hanging around in shul. Let's say you're sitting in the Beis Medrash and it's like a shtiblach, or you're hanging out at the kotel, and it's like minyanim all the time. So a kohen can go to the kotel and duchen all morning long. So some say that when you're doing that on the second, third, fourth, fifth, tenth duchening, you shouldn't say the bracha. You should be yotzei from the guy standing next to you. The guy standing next to you says the bracha, you answer amen. Right? Which is true generally in mitzvot. So he says, I always was careful to say the bracha bi'ahava, right, to emphasize the ahava. Okay. Shalu talmidav et Rabbi Preda b'me'arachti yamim. Amar lahem mi'amai lo kadamani adam leveta midrash. I always got there first. Nobody else ever beat me. It's a good practice, by the way, you know, to get to shul early, to get to shul on time. I minimally to get to shul. No, if you get to shul on time.
Well, it's Beit HaMidrash.
The Beit HaMidrash. It's true, it's the Beit HaMidrash. But let's talk about shul. You know, if you get to shul exactly on time.
You're late.
You're late.
True story. When my in-laws never fight. I've never seen my in-laws fight.
Uh-huh.
I remember like my first couple of years in marriage, I asked my father-in-law, I was going with him to shul, and I asked him, like, the Shabbos morning, I was going with him to shul, and he was talking about it for some reason. I asked him, like, what's the secret? He goes, I always leave Friday night to go to shul 10 minutes early.
I have a friend who's making a wedding for his daughter. He married off two sons, and now he's making a wedding for his daughter tomorrow night.
That's what
I said to him, what's the difference in marrying off sons and a daughter? He said, marrying off a son is like Erev Shabbos. Marrying off a daughter is like Erev Pesach.
Very good.
Yeah. So, yeah. So if you get to shul on time, you're late. Besides the fact we mentioned last week, when you get, you're not supposed to run right into davening. You're not supposed to be like running in like as they're saying v'urachum. You're supposed to get to shul in order to sit leshevet benachat ruach, like the Gemara, like the Mishnah in Brachos says about the chassid barishonim shayusho in sha'achat. Sha'a probably didn't mean 60 minutes. It probably meant like what we call a sha'a kala. So you have to catch your breath before davening. But certainly for shacharis, we have this crazy minhag here in Eretz Yisrael. That we don't say brachos and we don't say brachos and we don't say karbanos. In other words, the davening starts here at 7:40. It starts with Rabbi Yishmael at 7:40, and brachos and karbanos are on your own cheshbon. You have to figure out how much time you need for brachos and karbanos and calculate backwards t minus however many minutes.
Well, I don't understand how the guy just coming to show this is going on.
He said brachos and karbanos at home.
Anything.
I assume he said it all at home. Yeah. I used to say brachos and karbanos at home because I knew, like, if I waited, you know, like. Yeah. But it's a problem. In America, it makes davening longer, but it's a crazy system we have. So nobody ever got this.
There's other reasons davening is longer in the U.S. They don't go as fast. I have to get 15 minutes early just so, because I don't even try to get together with that. It's like, I want to start Shemona Esrei at the same time.
But for learning also, you should always be to shul. Somebody asked me, like, you know, how do you get a good seat in shul here? Here we have no assigned seats. If you get to shul on time for mincha on Friday afternoon, you can have any seat in the shul you want, right? Except for mine. But if you get to shul, if you're in shul before the chazan goes up with Ashrei Yashrei Ve'Secha for mincha, you can have any seat you want.
Like
Kol HaKolim Zohar.
I make it a point to get to shul early enough, so I get the seat that I want in the floor so no one bothers me.
Right. So number one, he says, nobody ever beat me to Beit Midrash. Number two, Lo Berachti Lefnei Kohen. I never said Birkat HaMazon in the prayer. I always was Mechabed the Kohen.
Didn't someone who said that he never said the Bracha for Kat Kohen?
No. This is the third. This is Repreda. Velo achalti mebehema shelo hurmu matnoteha. And I never ate from an animal where the priestly gifts were not separated. And as you know, that besides Trumot HaMasrot from produce, when you shecht an animal, parts of the animal are the matnot kunan, have to be given over to the Kohen. Yeah. So what does it mean? I never ate from an animal. It's like saying I never ate produce that didn't have Trumot HaMasrot taken off. Well, I mean, if you eat produce, it's usher. So what does it mean he never ate? What is the difference? As of Tevel.
But for the animal, the brisket doesn't get in there. You know if the brisket it didn't belong to the Kohen.
Right. In other words, matnot kuna from the animal are not kadosh like truma. Matnot kuna is a gift.
That's a different thing.
Right?
Okay. But that's a different reason.
Oh, and as you're saying, because you know which pieces go to the Kohen, there's no... Right. Ah, okay. So, but it's more than that. So then the Gemara says, "Do Amar b'Yitzchak, Amar b'Yochanan, Asur le'achol mi'behema shelo hurmu mi'matnoteha. Amar b'Yitzchak, Kol ha'ochel mi'behema shelo hurmu matnoteha, ki'ilu ochel tzvalim. If you eat from an animal before the priestly gifts have been separated, it's like you're eating tevel. It's like you're eating grapes that haven't had trumos and masters taken off. But that is not the halacha. V'leit hilchata kevate. That is not the halacha.
It's very difficult.
Why?
Because you can take vegetables and you put them inside. What do you like? Slaughter animal. You don't have a coin around you. What do you like? Not the animal. It's
No. Hurmu doesn't mean that you haven't given it to them. It means you haven't separated it off.
It's not like you can take a piece of grain and put it inside. You can like leave this rotting meat on the side of it.
No. You have this animal. You shech the animal. You have a whole animal in front of you. So I go into the butcher and I say, look, give me from the short ribs. Right? And he whacks off the short ribs and gives you. But the matnot kuhuna have not been separated from that animal yet. And those, according to the rejected opinion, you check the animal. What's the first thing you have to do? I mean, I guess after you check the simonim and everything else, you slice off when you know, like in the butcher, they had that chart with the numbers and the, right? Yeah, no matter how long I live, I'll never know what those numbers are. So the first thing the katsav should do is to chop off the three parts that are the matnot kuhuna and laharimotam, to set them aside, right? Even before Mr. Cohen walks into the butcher, right? And then you can sell the food that's there. Just like, by the way, trumo de masrot, right? I'm mafresh trumo de masrot. I don't have to give it to the Cohen and the Levi. And forget the fact that bezman hazeh, we don't do it. But I don't have to give it to a Cohen and Levi before I start it. Once I've been mafresh trumo de masrot, the food is now mitukan, and it is no longer tevel. So the rejected opinion here says that until you've separated off the matnot kuhuna, the whole behema is ke'ilu like it's tevel, like it's produce that hasn't had trumos and masrot taken from it. But that's not the halacha. But nevertheless, Rav Preda was makpid not to do this.
We do that today?
Do we do matnot kuhuna today? We do not do matnot kuhuna today.
What do you do if there's no coin?
No, well, there's always a coin someplace. But matnot kuhuna, again, matnot kuhuna, just like we don't do, how long have you been living here, Mr. Levy? How many times has a neighbor knocked on your door and said, oh, here's maaser?
Actually, the other way around. People knock on my door and ask me.
How often do people come to you with their maaser?
Hasn't happened.
Why?
Well, the people cover all over I am.
Yeah, because unlike truma, we take off the truma. Nobody gives you the truma. You're a kohen. Why don't they give you the truma? Because you are tamei and the truma is tamei and you're not allowed to eat it. It has to be destroyed, which is why we either wrap it up and dispose of it in a respectable manner, or you burn it or destroy it. That's not true about maaser. The Levi can eat maaser that's tamei, even if he's tamei. If I give you truma, can you say, oh, that looks delicious, would you like a little bit?
No.
Why?
Because
I'm not a kohen. I'm not allowed to eat it. But if I bring you maaser, you can say, oh, that looks delicious. Have some. And I can have some. Why? Because maaser is not kadosh. And it's the property of the Levi. And he can do whatever he wants with it. But since maaser is dine mamonot. So in dine mamonot, in financial matters, we say this is the property of the Levi, right? We say hamotzi mechavero alav araya. You want me to give you the maser? Prove to me that you're a Levi. You cannot do that despite your last name, which now I know is not even really your last name.
It was a long time ago. Now just come back again.
Maybe it was, but how'd you get a name like Lipschitz? It's
from Levi.
Right? So since you
somebody could think you're a Levi, not actually related.
Since you cannot prove that you're a Levi, and since I have good reason to question, yes. Anyway, whether I'm a Levi or Yisrael, I still have to give Trumos and Masters. So I don't have to give it to you. So the same thing with Matot Kuna. Matot Kuna is a din, and it's not like Truma. It's more like Maser. Right? So you don't know.
What do you say about a Kohen who checks an animal? Does the Kohen have to separate?
No, I don't think so. I don't know.
I think I was read somewhere learned that.
With produce, a Levi has to separate out the Maaser because he has to separate out the Trumot Maaser that's in it. But there's no doubt that he gets to keep it for himself.
Right. It's like the Kohen makes a dough, they go challah. Okay.
Yes, but challah is more akin to truma. Challah is more akin to truma. And even if a kohen that grows his own produce, it still has to be mafresh truma to masrot. Even though you're not required to do this, he was always makbid to first separate off the matnot kuna before he partook of the animal. Why? It's a midos kosidus. It's a proper way to act. You should, you know, just like you go, you have, if you have untithed produce in your house, you go cherry picking. It's that time of year again, right? Chachamin of the Rosho. You should, a diligent person should not leave tefel around his house, just like you wouldn't leave other non-kosher food laying around in your house. It's a mitchell. Somebody will come and they'll say, oh, these cherries look delicious, so let me have some. So the same thing. Below berachti lifnei kohen lememra de ma'aliyuta hi vaha, that it's a virtue to always let the kohen.
Well, what? Question, no?
Oh, yeah. I'm sorry. That's good. Lemeimer de maluta. Hey, is this a virtue to always let a kohen mention? Vaha, Amar Rabbi Yochanan, kol talmid chacham shemivarech lifanav, afilu kohen gadol am haaretz, oto talmid chacham chayav mita. But wait a second. We say that a talmid chacham should always do the birkat hamazon, even if there's a kohen gadol himself. If the kohen gadol himself is an am haaretz, the talmid chacham should bench. So that goes against the idea where he says he always let a coin bench. Shneemar kol masnae avu mavet, all those who hate me love death. Al tikre what's the nigula? Masanai ela masniai, those that cause me to be hated. Those that cause me to be hated are the Amei Haaretz. Yeah, who's the me here? No, Hashem. Ki ka'amar ihu bishavim. So when he said that he always let a kohen bench, that wasn't talking about a case of a kohen am haaretz versus a talmud chacham. It's when all things are equal, right? And as if you have a chacham kohen and a chacham levi and a chacham Yisrael, who should bench? The kohen. Shalu Talmidav et Rabbi Nuchunya ben Akana. This is the Nun in Zalpan. B'mai erachti yamim. Why did you merit long life? Omar lahem yamai lo nitchabarati bekalon chavirai, velo alta al mitati klalat chavirai, uvatran b'mamoni hayiti. And then the Gemara explains what each of these is. Lo nitchabarati bekalon chavirai. I never gain glory at the embarrassment of my friend. This is one of the things that the Rambam says you can't do tshuva for. Mitchabed bakalon chavercha. Or you lose olam haba for. You know what this is. You a practical joke. Right? Why is it called a practical joke?
It's an action.
Practical dealing is you cause somebody else to be embarrassed, you cause them humiliation, and everybody else knows that you did it. Like, as you're all standing there, you put the bucket of something unpleasant on top of the door. You say, hey, hey, hey.
Nobody needs to be unpleasant. It could just be water.
So-and-so, nobody really wants. So-and-so's about to walk in. Everybody gather around. He walks through and all falls on his head. And everybody laughs, and they all think, ah, yeah, how funny you were. You pulled that off, whatever. You're mitchabe. It's a weird kind of kibud, right? But everybody now thinks, whatever you, at the expense of the other guy. Ki hada ravuna, dare mara aktafe. Ata rav chana bar chanilai veka dare mine. So he was walking, Rav Huna was walking, and he had a hoe. I guess he was coming back from the field, and he's schlepping his hoe over his shoulder. So, what? So he says, Rebbe, let me take that from you. Said V'chana b'chanilai. So Omar, like, Ira gilt de daret b'matecha dare v'ilo it yakure ana b'ziluta. He says, well, if you're accustomed to walking around carrying a tool over your shoulder, then fine. But if not, I don't want to be gloried through your shame. Right? In other words, if you think that me walking around with this, carrying this this tool over my shoulder is like a little bit of a bizayon, and you're going to do it, and it'll be a bizayon to you, but not to me, and everybody will see, his Talmud is carrying his, it's like the Pope. Like the Pope carries his own, this Pope. Not the other popes. This Pope, he carries his own bags. Because they say he's like a modest man.
Jimmy Carter
used to carry his own bags. Rav Aaron Lichtenstein used to carry his own bags. Right? He was not, they say about Rav Aaron that he was like that. He didn't like people to, they go someplace with the yeshiva, and afterwards he'd stay behind to pick up the litter that was left on the bus. So, that's the way he was. Like, he wouldn't let somebody carry. All of the Rosh Yeshiva shtick, like where they open doors for him and they carry his bags and they carry his books. He wasn't into that.
The opening scene of Shabbat.
Yeah, wait. What's the opening scene?
There's a pamaz. Like, the Rosh Yeshiva. They're carrying this. They're carrying that. They're opening the door.
Right. Velo alta al mitati klalat chaverai, and I never went to bed with the curse of my friend. I never took it to bed with me. I never, all of the slights and all of the insults and all of the aggravation and all of the nastiness of the day. I never, my parents say, the secret to happy marriage is don't go to bed angry. Right, I never took it to bed with me. Right, ki ha de marzutra, ki hava solik, the puraya omar sharele the chol man de tzaran. Before we go to bed, and this is what we say in the Kriya Shema Lamita. There's that section that we say where we forgive anybody that may have offended us, and we ask for their forgiveness. And with the closing of the day, let's put it all behind us. Vatran b'mamoni haiti, I was. Vatran, I was
liberal
with my money. The Omar Mar, Iov Vatran b'mamone. The biblical Job was also liberal with his money. However, Shehaya maniach pruta lechinvanai b'mamone. He would he'd tell the guy, keep the you go into the store, and they're looking, they're digging. Now they don't even have agarot anymore. They still have 10 agarot.
Yeah.
10 agarot they have. They don't have 5 agarot. They don't have 1 agarot.